Transportation Committee will come to order. On the agenda today, there's a long list of bills, but the first seven of them are part of the subcommittee report from Senator Dibble's subcommittee. And Senator Dibble would move that subcommittee report. We have to adopt the subcommittee report, and then we're going to hear just a little bit about each one of these bills. All of the all the work that was done in subcommittee is being passed out now. That's what all these amendments are that have Senator Dibble's signature on them. And we have a copy of one of those for everybody except for the very first one, which is Senator Sieben's bill. But we do have that that subcommittee report right here. Ms. Berzosky is going to read how it fits into the bill. Senator Dibble would move the subcommittee report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Now, first we have Senator Sieben's bill, and this is Senate File 101. It deals with the Chicago to St. Paul high-speed line corridor. And Ms. Berzosky, if you could read the changes.
Mr. Chair and committee, the first changes are on page 1, lines 6 and 7. Delete Metropolitan Council for a grant to the Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority. That's all deleted. And insert Commissioner of Transportation. Then page 1 after line 20, insert a new section 2 called Phase 2. And that says, after an alignment connecting downtown St. Paul and downtown Minneapolis is identified, the high-speed rail line may be extended from downtown St. Paul to downtown Minneapolis. Then on page 2, line 5, delete and 2 and insert to 3. So sections 1 to 3 are effective. And renumber the sections.
What was that?
That's very confusing. So, Mr.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. That is the amendment as we made it in subcommittee, you know, and you know, I don't know that we necessarily have the, since that amendment was made, you know, I think, you know, there was some growing realization that the federal stimulus bill might make the ability to build out to Minneapolis more concurrent than this language would necessarily envision. So I just want to say that for the record, because we've had further discussions with, you know, folks who are very interested, of course, in making sure that the alignment gets to St. Paul, and we make sure that we fulfill all the aspirations and the expectations to get the line to St. Paul and build out Union Depot. We want to concurrently explore the possibility of getting to Minneapolis. This language might not quite capture that, but we can deal with that at a future point in time. So we can just adopt this bill as we have dealt with it in subcommittee.
Senator Olson, did I hear Minatriska in there from Minneapolis?
No, Mr. Chair, I just wondered if Senator Dibble thought that there was going to be any money left for high-speed rail after beyond the route from California to Las Vegas that the Senate Majority Leader might have an interest in.
I've got to call in to Senator Reed on that.
He's one.
You know those train cars on that train, they could put slots on cars. That's kind of a take on Tomasoni slots and bars.
There you go.
Send us that money. But committee, what we're going to do here was we're going to hear from the authors, and you don't have to get up from your seat, Senator Sieben, but if you can just give us an outline of what the bill is. Our intention here today is these bills that were heard and vetted and amended, each one of them were amended except for one in subcommittee, is to pass these bills along to the Finance Committee, and they're going to give them to Senator Langseth's Bonding Committee for possible inclusion. In the meantime, as a committee, we'll try to put together a list of what our priorities are. in this regard to send to Senator Langseth's. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and especially Senator Langseth. This, I think everyone is familiar with this proposal, but what it does is appropriate. It requests $10 million to the Department of Transportation to do some further analysis of the high-speed, the federally designated high-speed rail line that runs the Minnesota portion that comes up from La Crescent through Winona, Red Wing, and into the Union Depot in St. Paul. And then as Senator Dibble requested or mentioned, there is language that we that was added in the subcommittee that references that the future study could include a route to Minneapolis. We're hoping that much of this this money will become available through the federal stimulus, but I really think it's important that in case that doesn't happen, either because of because the $8 billion isn't enough to cover it or for whatever other reason, that the state will once again make this commitment and put it in our bonding bill, and hopefully this time now it will survive the governor's veto.
Senator Dave.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dave.
I only have to comment once today on rail, and then I can be quiet. I've been trying to think, and I know that there's people in the state of Minnesota, and I well know that Congressman Oberstar feels like we should be some type European country where we're riding trains. And it seemed to me that our forefathers back with the Wright brothers, they gave us airplanes with propellers, and then they gave us jets, and they gave us the wonderful car that you could drive to New Brunswick or Anchorage or Columbia or Panama, or you can get in your car and drive. And I have a hard time figuring out the market. In fact, I looked in the paper. You can fly for $49. You can fly to Chicago for $49. I called up Amtrak. It costs $112. The rail we're talking about is 5.5 hours. I don't know if we're all getting pumped into where we want to buy the sizzle and not get any steak, but I don't understand. Who would get on a train? I guess if you wanted to go to Chicago for New Year's Eve, it'd be wonderful. You could have a few drinks on the way down and the way back. I'm trying to figure out, a businessman, even with families or whatever, time is so important. I'm having a really, really tough time buying into rail lines. It seems like in 20 or 30 years from now, some of us, maybe we will be flying ourselves. Railroads, it's like 100-year-old technology. And the cost. I listened, and I'm trying to figure out what it is that is driving Minnesota or any other part of the country, unless they, 100 years ago had subways, and to take us out of what is probably the greatest thing that Americans have, and that's that you could actually get in your car today and go any place you want. And if you're going to go to Chicago, aren't you just going to fly?
Right.
I just can't believe that there would be a day that I would say, today I want to take a 5.5 hours of my time to ride on a train that is going to go to Chicago. And for the scenery, I don't know how often we would do that. I'm trying to wonder, wouldn't it be better to have like a $100,000 marketing plan that somebody would do in the metropolitan area to 3 million Minnesotans and ask the question, what would you do on a train, or what would you ride the train to Chicago? Or are we trying to say, please park your automobile because this is the only thing we're going to have? It's a question. It's pretty open-ended. It's a, I guess it's a philosophy I've had for a long time, and I'm having a hard time to figure out who would actually get on a train to ride to Chicago.
Senator Day, I'll answer that question right after Easter when I get off the Amtrak. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Day, you know, I appreciate that one of the beauties of having all the different senators is we each bring our experiences and our worldviews and our philosophies, and so I respect that that is, you know, how you see transportation. And I sit next to you, and I have a lot of respect for your view, and I love to go on road trips, but I actually, this is my fourth year in the legislature, and the first year, the thing I was most interested in was carrying a bill to have commuter rail studied on 394 corridor, because I have a vision that, you know, people in my community want to be able to drive their car to Ridgedale, get out, leave their car there, and take the train to Minneapolis and then on to St. Paul. And the funny thing is, as soon as I put forward that bill, the mayor of Wayzata called and said, let's take the Wayzata Depot and let's turn that into something. You know, take that commuter rail out to Wayzata. And we, you know, got a bunch of people together and got pretty excited about that. And so my 4 years in the legislature, besides education, rail has been the thing that I've been most excited about. And I'm a high-speed rail commissioner alternate, and I go to these conferences. And I think that we do have a vision for a multimodal system. There are those who will drive, but the seniors are getting older, and they'll lose their independence. They need an alternative. And then we've got the young people, and I have two in college right now, one who's graduated, one coming up, and they're going to pick a city to live based on where they, you know, where they feel comfortable. And they've traveled all over. They're very lucky, and they've been on those trains in Europe. They've done a lot more than I've done, certainly, or had at their age. But they want this. And so the high-speed rail, I agree. The business community, and I don't call them businessmen. I would call them business people. But I think the business community would not take a five-hour train to Chicago. I think that's short-sighted of us. And so I go to these high-speed rail things, and I stand up and say, we should not be talking about a 100-mile-an-hour train. We should be talking about the trains that equal the speed of what's happening in France. If high speed means really high speed, if you can't cut the time it takes to get from here to Chicago, it's not going to work. And so just on my way to the Capitol today on NPR, they were talking about that very thing, that we ought not to be investing in the kind of technology that is old. We ought to invest in the latest high-speed rail, and that President Obama is going to make this a flagship of his presidency. So I just couldn't be more excited, and that shows you we have the differences in the legislature. But so I thank Senator Sieben for the work she's done on this. I thank Senator Dibble for his leadership, and I particularly want to echo Senator Dibble's comments about let's think big and let's think about adding the addition of the line from St. Paul to Minneapolis. Maybe it will become the beginning of that commuter rail line that we envision out to our community, Senator Olson. We'll see. So that would be my comments. I couldn't resist. Usually I just like to let Senator Day express himself.
Well,
and
Mr. Chairman,
don't answer.
So who will ride the train,
Senator Day,
to Chicago? Who do you know that's going to ride the train to Chicago? What is it going to, who's it going to be? I mean, do you have just some ideas of people that you talk to? Why would they do it? And I rode a train to college. Okay, until I got a car. But because I didn't like people picking me up and moving around, and it's just. But the point is, maybe you can answer. Maybe somebody can ask the question. So, do we have studies? Who would ride the train to Chicago? Now, granted, I will tell you, I know people that go there on New Year's Eve. I haven't tried that yet, but that does sound like a lot of fun. But I'm talking about many millions, and hundreds of millions, and billions of dollars. And you tell me, what type person or what?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Senator Day, it is my
envision that that high-speed rail is not a five-hour trip, but is in fact a shorter trip. And then if you take the time to drive to the airport, then go through security, wait an hour, get to Chicago, then have to get a cab all the way into the city, you will actually save time by taking the train. And my sister lives there. I will be riding that train to Chicago, as will, I think, many people, if we can do our very best to make sure we aren't short-sighted and have a slow train to Chicago.
Senator Stephen, then Senator Jungbauer. Okay, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Day and I agree on so many things, but, you know, I kind of like the train. I actually never thought I'd ride the LRT, but I ride it, and I think, I can't remember, it was some real wise person, maybe George Carlin or something, that said once that, you know, anybody that knows anything about a bus would never ride a bus, and I'm there. I don't ride buses. I kind of like trains. And yes, I do get to commute to Chicago more often than I'd like for business. And every time I do that, yeah, I got to be at the airport an hour to an hour and a half early, then fly, and then get off. And if I have other stuff to bring, I have to get that, and then find a cab and take that extra, usually 40-minute to an hour drive into town. And last time I remembered, the train actually stops in Chicago as opposed to, unless they move the airports closer to the city. If we had a high-speed rail, yes, I would ride it because it would be the same amount of time as taking the plane. So it's just one of those things. I think that, and the studies do bear that out, that business people will ride a train, business people, and they won't ride the bus because business can be done in the train.
Right. Yeah, Senator Jungbauer, you bring up a good point, you know. When you're taking off on the airplane, you get up in the air, they say, oh, you can't use your, you know, wireless devices on a train. They give you hookups so you can use your wireless devices. So, I don't know. I think there would be a lot of business people, and I don't know. I'll be taking the Amtrak from Bloomington to Chicago, or Chicago to St. Paul after Easter. I'll give you a written report, Senator Day. It's 10 hours. I can drive it in about 7.5, but
Mr. Chairman,
I don't have to drive.
Amtrak has been a total failure in the United States.
That's not.
I mean, the only guy that doesn't realize that, I think, is Oberstar, because he's trying to rebuild it and pump more money into it. It's been a failure. Amtrak people have given up riding on it. It's been they don't have correct times. It's slow. You miss connections. I just. That being said, I guess I,
yeah.
And I'm surely going to lose this one, but the big thing we used to talk about was Portland. Portland was the one that always came in. Everybody talked about Portland and their train. Highest unemployment in the country in Portland, and their trains are now having major problems. I will tell the people that live in the metropolitan area, you better be careful, because I will tell you what's going to happen. You're going to be subsidizing a stationary train in a certain area, and there's going to be no buses that are going to go out near your home. And that's where people need it. They need it a few blocks from their home. The commuter rail is fine. I voted for the North Star. Get on something, park your car, drive to downtown Minneapolis. That was not a problem for me. I voted for that. I pushed it. But the whole business of having light rail in the areas that we're talking about, I think 10 and 20 years from now. In fact, I will tell you, I'll go on record that if the Twins ballpark would have been moved, the Hiawatha Rail, we would have been in a disaster, because the ridership, if you ever look at it, it's at nights and on weekends. It's not during the we've had hundreds of thousands of riders that are riding this, and it's no longer, as Dan Larson would say, the train to nowhere. It's now the entertainment train. But, we've decided that we want the sizzle, and we're going to get the sizzle, and we will see how it does 10 or 20 or 30 years from now. But I will tell you, I personally believe that railroads are totally outdated, and that it is technology that is over 100 years old. And if I lose my car, then I guess I'll have to get around somehow, and maybe that's what we're getting to.
On that, is Mr. Shetnin still here? He left. That was a wise move. Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 101, as amended with the subcommittee report, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Sieben, you have Senate File 201, and members, you should have the amendments in your packet now.
Mr. Chair and members, this
102, I'm sorry, Senate File 102.
Senate File 102 is a request for bonding money for the Red Rock Corridor Transitway, and it would help construct park and rides specifically in that this money would be used for park and ride construction in Hastings, which the added benefit of getting this done sooner rather than later is that those park and rides, the city already has a lot available and ready to go, and we want that park and ride to be constructed so that it can build commuter service along the corridor, but also help with the upcoming construction of the Hastings Bridge. So with that, I would ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 102? Seeing none. Seeing none, Senator Sieben would move that Senate File 102, as amended in the committee report from the subcommittee, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Next couple of authors are not here. They didn't know we were going to be doing this, actually. But members, we have Senate File 320. It's Senator Pappas's bill in front of us now. And Senator Dibble would move Senate File 320 as amended by the subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, I have a slight oral amendment for this.
Okay.
On line 1.8, strike the words environmental work and insert the word construction. And members, that's because the environmental work on the Union Depot has already been completed.
She's looking at the 300.
Which one?
I'm sorry.
Yours already passed.
320.
We're on 320.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was
okay,
looking at the
not a problem.
Senate file.
Okay, Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 320 as amended by the subcommittee be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, can we act on bills without the author present?
Yes, we can.
Yes. Okay.
This is a subcommittee report.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the clarification.
Mr. Chair, I'm a co-author on the bill.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, so we do have at least one person here.
Three.
So.
We have three of the four.
Three. Mm-hmm. We have a majority. On the Dibble motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. We have Senate File 367 in front of us now. It's Northern Lights Express. It's the Senator Pretton Solon bill. Senator Dibble makes the same motion, recommended 367 as amended by the subcommittee to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? Senator Day?
Mr. Chairman, how many times have we voted in the last 30 years to run a train to Duluth?
Well, Senator Day, I think the last time that
I mean, how many trains have we had to Duluth? I guess that's what I should say. That
well, I think the train quit running in like 81 or 91,
no.
One of the two. I think it was 81,
no,
1981.
No, it was later.
It was later
Mr.
than
Chairman,
maybe
I've
it was 19.
I've ridden the train when back before they found somebody playing mischief, and so we couldn't do that anymore, and then stopped the train too.
Okay, it must have been 91. Okay. It's been a while, Senator Day.
Yeah.
Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just, is this the line that's, I know there's the Rush Line corridor as well. Is this a different line that where they split? They're both going to end up in Duluth, but one goes to Minneapolis and one goes to St. Paul? How does that work?
Well, Senator Dahl, there's been a lot of different routes proposed for both of those lines, and I think the two entities are, you know, these rail authorities are working together to come up with the best solution. So I don't think you're going to see them both going to Duluth. I think it would probably be one or the other, and it's probably going to be one that goes real fast. I think Chairman Obistar was a little insistent upon that.
Okay, Mr. Chair, so then they're going to, through the money that we're looking at here, is to study which one is the better line to proceed with? Or
No, Senator, I believe this is going to go to the St. Louis and Lake Counties Regional Rail Authority so that they can start to acquire land and do the design and the engineering for the Northern Lights rail line.
And, Mr. Chair, then I'm just, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. So I understand, I mean, because I've been familiar with the Rush Line corridor from St. Paul up to there, but this would be a separate line that we're going to proceed with, or we feel it's merit enough to move forward on and spend money on? I'm just curious.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I think, Senator Dahl and Mr. Chair, the Rush Line at this point is being studied and examined, and, you know, ultimately sending a, you know, commuter rail up, you know, up the Rush Line has not been foreclosed. I think some of their early work shows that may start as express bus service. I think this line, as conceptualized, comes in more of a diagonal and comes down into Minneapolis. At some point, you know, maybe both will feed up, you know, there'll be commuter rail access. This is intercity rail, which is distinct from commuter rail. And Rush Line commuter rail access may run straight up out of St. Paul and intersect with this line at some point in the future.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, so is this supposed to go to Hinckley as well, both these lines, that is the kind of their, I guess, northern depot before they head on to Duluth? Is that the idea?
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't swear on the Rush Line, but yes, the Northern Lights Express, I think, is conceptualized as going through Hinckley.
All right.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Senator Dahl, if you look at the other bill, and Council just pointed out that it says Rush Line to Hinckley.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
On the further discussion on the Dibble motion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail. Now we have Senate File 377. This is the Senator Latz bill in front of us. And I believe, folks, that you also have the committee report, the amendments in your packet.
Right.
So, Senator.
This one wasn't amended.
Oh, this one was not amended. But there is a committee report. So, Senator Latz, thanks for coming. And what we're doing is we're passing these bills on to Finance, who's going to turn them over to Senator Langseth for possible inclusion in his bonding bill. Is there anything you want to say on your Southwest Transitway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I just want to acknowledge the support of the Transit Subcommittee for this bill. So far, Hennepin County has footed the bill for all of the analysis and development of this proposed line. They're already in the process of a draft environmental analysis, so they've gone through a lot of phases in preparing for this, up to this point, a large and extensive public input process as well, involving more than 90 community meetings, 18 public open houses to gather input. This would be a significant enhancement to the commuter needs in the Southwest corridor from Minneapolis down through St. Louis Park into Eden Prairie, hitting probably major businesses in Eden Prairie. And I know there's some uncertainty about some of the final connecting points or routes in this that is being worked out. But we are well down the road already to complete the environmental impact work and move into preliminary engineering. So we'd appreciate your support on this. And I should also acknowledge the support of Commissioner Dorfman, who spearheaded this effort in the southwestern community from Hennepin County Board, and Twin West Chambers support as well.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Letts, I've been trying to follow the various route discussions and the alternatives. I don't recall that I've seen that they've actually reached the final conclusion. Have they reached a decision on the final route for this corridor?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, not for parts of it. The middle portion of it is definite. I think there's still some decision making about where and how it's going to connect up in Minneapolis. There's still some final decisions to make about the Eden Prairie terminus as well. But the whole middle portion is already set.
And Senator Letts, I take it that some of the preliminary engineering that are in your bill and some of the preliminary environmental work that's going to be done here is going to answer a few of those questions.
That will, Mr. Chairman, and so will additional community input determination about what impact in the areas, what the relative cost will be of going in certain directions, what impact will be on ridership from where you connect up in Minneapolis, for example, and where you don't. And those will all have an impact on those final decisions. Our view is it's really given as far along as Hennepin County taxpayers directly have brought this project. It's time for the state to step up to the plate and help on this regional amenity.
Mr. Chair?
Further questions? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the reasons I think this route using an old rail bed essentially is probably more effective than ones where you mess up city streets. and trying to go back to the streetcar, is that you eliminate some of the grade crossings. And I don't know how, do you know how many grade crossings still remain on this route versus grade separated crossings?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm afraid I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay. Thank you.
It sounds like Senator Olson wants some more information, Senator Letts. So if you've got the overall plan for that corridor, it might be good to drop it on Senator Olson's doorstep there. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to this question. I just wanted to mention, if it hadn't been mentioned, I'm sorry, I was distracted for a few minutes. I don't know if the committee knows, but Congress last night, the Senate and the House conferees in their negotiation on the upcoming appropriation bills have stepped forward, recognized Southwest Corridor with some dollars for preliminary design and engineering, about $500,000. Also in that bill, they're going to appropriate dollars for Cedar Avenue express bus service, about almost $1 million. Red Rock Line, about $475,000, about $500,000 to do the preliminary design and engineering, as well as the next installment for the Central Corridor, about $20 million, and then the final installment for the North Star Corridor, about $71 million. So, that was a testament to this region coming together around some ideas for how we build out transit and transitway connections. And Congress has recognized that, and now is partnering with us on some of these next steps that we're taking.
Great. Thank you. Senator Day?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, are we, I've heard estimates of $42, $44 million in deficit for our Metropolitan Transit. Is that, is there money from Washington coming to help us with that, or where are we at in all of that? I mean, how are we going to get out of that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Day, because the motor vehicle sales tax has collapsed, there is a deficit in how we can operate our bus service and some of our train service, and that is, you're right, it's about $45 million over the coming biennium. That's also a function of the fact that as we try to build out these transitways, we need to figure out how we're going to operate them, how we're going to keep operating a really vigorous bus system, which, you've talked about that a lot, is the backbone of our system, the backbone of mobility in terms of transit service for our metropolitan area. Metro Transit was just here a couple of days ago to talk about the stimulus dollars. Maybe we can shove in capital on this side, shove out some of our existing capital programming on the other side to free up some dollars for operating. We have some dollars that we levy region-wide on the property tax. Most of that is locked down for some specific purposes. Maybe over the next couple of years we can flex those dollars for operating. But the point you make, which I take to heart, which I talk about a lot, is if we're going to be building up a transit system, whether or not we believe rail is a good thing, some of us do believe it. If we're going to be building up a railway and express bus service, we have to figure out how we're going to operate this system, including the buses.
Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 377, as adopted by the subcommittee and subcommittee report, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Moy, we have Senate File 414. Do you want to give us a quick explanation on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, the bill is only one sentence, and it basically is for land acquisition, design and construction of park and ride and park and pool lots along the Rush Line Corridor. We did make one small amendment in the subcommittee on line 1.9 of the bill. We struck the W off of the I-35E/I-35.
All right, great. Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 414, as adopted by the subcommittee, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. We do have the Senator Metzen bill in front of us. Folks, there was a slight change to that as well. That change is in your packet. And it provides that grant would go to the Dakota County Regional Rail Authority. Senator Dibble moves at Senate File 647 be recommended to pass as in the subcommittee report and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion on the Robert Street Corridor? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. And now we are at Senate File 300, and I believe, Senator Sieben, you have an amendment for Senate File 300.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and now that I'm on the right bill, on lines 1.8, delete the words environmental work and insert construction. And that's because, as I explained before, the environmental work has already been completed.
On the Sieben motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Members, even though Senator Pappas is not here, we do have Senator Moy, Dibble, Sieben are all here. So, Senator Moy, maybe you can, she left. Senator Dibble, maybe you can give us your top three best reasons why this needs to go to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Well, I have one. My first answer. Jobs,
okay,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, those are three real good reasons.
Mr. Chair, I'd also just add that the post office has agreed to move out of the Union Depot, and the acquisition is moving along nicely, and so this is the next stage in funding that's needed to continue to move the project forward. If you recall, the federal government gave the state $25 million for the initial acquisition of the property, and so now this money is for the actual revitalization of the depot.
All right. Senator Pappas, you are here, and we're starting to hear your bill, Senate File 300, and there has been a small amendment made to it on 1.8. I think that you've spoken with Senator Sieben about that, so it's not a surprise to you.
And you've already changed environmental work to construction?
Yes, we have.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, members. I'm sorry I I'm late. I'm from my own committee. And you know that, I don't know if you have you had any testimony or anything yet?
Just what was provided by some committee members.
Okay, so the historic Union Depot is being developed by Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority as a multimodal transit hub. And this beautiful facility will once again provide economic vitality and excitement in downtown St. Paul, which we always need some excitement in downtown St. Paul, especially since I'm moving there. I'm going to make it much more exciting. As people take advantage of convenient transportation options in a building listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In these difficult times for our economy, this project is already generating new jobs in the region as the post office constructs its replacement mail sorting facility in Eagan. The depot will provide many additional construction and long-term jobs as it is restored to its historic use. So I want to thank the committee for its prior support of $3.5 million for the project to help match over $50 million in federal funding that's already available, and I hope that we can count on you for $9 million for the rest of the match. I don't know what your timeline is like, Mr. Chair, but we do have Ramsey County Commissioner and Chair of the Regional Rail Authority, Jim McDonough, here, and also Steve Morris, the Transit Project Manager, to help answer any questions.
Okay.
There they are.
Yes. And we spoke earlier, so I think that everything is on track here, pardon the pun. Senator Moi would move that Senate File 300 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, were you going to talk about Central Corridor at all today, or have you already done that?
I moved that for you.
You did that already?
Senator Pappas, we have one bill left on the agenda.
Thank you very much.
And that's Senator Dibble's bill. Thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm here to present Senate File 549, which is a bill in which we start taking a look for the first time at transportation and land use and what's going on with respect to how we're developing as a region, as municipalities around the state, but mostly with a focus on what's going on in the metropolitan area, and keeping an eye on some of our environmental goals and some of our land use decisions as they affect our infrastructure costs and the like. Mr. Chair and members, if we're going to be addressing climate change, we have to take a good look at all of our activities, not just how we generate electrical activity. We've certainly spent a lot of time in the last couple of years talking about how we generate electricity and the contribution that electrical energy generation makes to carbon dioxide emissions and all of course, the various other pollutants that involves. But that only gets us to about 35% of the question. The Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group has taken a look at this. This is the group that came together after we established our goals around reducing carbon dioxide emissions in the coming years to take a look across all of our activities, all the economic sectors, and did a fairly in-depth analysis. And Minnesota's story is not that different than what we find all over the country, a few little variations here and there, about 34%, like I said, comes from the power sector, electrical energy generation, about 24% from transportation, about 14% of the contribution is from ag activities, and the list goes on down from there, industrial, residential use, waste, how we deal with our waste, et cetera. And, of course, we know that about We know very well about the goals that we set forth for ourselves. We know that if we are going to get a handle on global warming, that we need to get to about 80% of the 2005 emissions by 2050. And we have some milestones along the way that we've set as goals for ourselves. As a state, we're hoping to reduce 15% below 2005 levels by 2015 and 30% below those 2005 carbon dioxide emission levels by 2025. The Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group recommended about 46 policy actions, and several of those had to do with transportation, transit, and really taking a look at how our land use decisions affect our transportation and transit decisions, and vice versa, how our transportation and transit decisions affect how we develop as cities and as a region. We know that transportation is not an activity unto itself. It is a means to an end. It means it's about people going places to do things. And when we think about the kind of transportation we need, we usually think about getting in our car, going to where we need to be, and where those destinations are that are already built. We don't often think about, okay, what if we build something here and something here and something here, and then maybe my transportation needs would be a little more efficient. I'd have more choices about how to get around and the like. So another way of saying, we seem to sometimes put our policy cart before the horse, and the truth of the matter is how we develop and how we make our transportation decisions are much more interactive and much more iterative. They're marketplace demands, zoning, property tax policy. Senator Skoy, we've had some good conversations about that in the last couple of days. Home ownership policies, how we subsidize transportation fuel, roadway construction policies, finance policy, many other policies interact to create the kind of development in the areas that we have. It's important to recognize when things change and when our policies maybe need to be updated to respond to change. We're facing changes to our demographics, changes to our environment, changes in what we expect in terms of outcomes for our environment, changes in our economy. Those changes demand that might be what has worked so well in the past won't work as well, or might get us some worse outcomes in the future. Transit, electric cars, those are all great things. We've had some good conversation about those, but they won't by themselves do the trick. As a matter of fact, if we build all the transit in the world, all of that effort will be quickly undermined, all that positive outcome, if we just simply, build to the urban fringe and beyond. Land use is, in fact, a key lever. It makes use of existing infrastructure. It allows a greater variety of uses that are in more proximity to one another. It allows for choices. We're never going to be leaving our cars. We'll always be driving cars to Chicago. We'll always be driving cars across the entire metro area. But there are folks who feel like they don't have choices, and we don't allow for choices. They get shoehorned into a specific set of choices that don't necessarily work for them. Transit, biking, walking are all alternatives that function well in terms of transportation more cost-effectively. We save a tremendous amount of money for not building new highways to the hilt, new parking lots to serve wide area shopping centers, more schools on the fringe, more police departments on the fringe, trying to support the aging infrastructure that we have in place. It's always a challenge. So with that, Mr. Chair, I can do a quick walkthrough of the bill, if that's your pleasure, and then we'll have some folks come up to testify. Very quickly, we have Section 1, of course. That's legislative findings. May or may not survive the Senate process. I like them. Other people don't. We'll see where we get with those. Senator Fischbach's not here, so maybe we'll get through this committee with those. Section 2 is taking a look at, just takes a look at we have existing values that we've ascribed. We recognize that wetlands are a public benefit for a whole variety of purposes. This recognizes that the carbon sequestration properties of wetlands is a public benefit. We just simply call that out and we name it, in addition to their benefits for habitat and water quality and things like that. Section 3, Mr. Chair, establishes a grant program. And this grant program, when I mentioned Greater Minnesota, this grant program really has to do with cities, municipalities, land use authorities at the local level in Greater Minnesota that would like to make some changes for themselves. It's not by any means mandatory. This is, you know, if they simply want to voluntarily undertake changes to their comprehensive planning and their zoning codes, it allows some grants to them to undertake that work. Section four and section five both have to do with schools and building new schools in Minnesota and how that affects land use. Right now, we have in place in the statutes and we invest the authority in the Commissioner of Education the ability to evaluate a school's proposal to either significantly rehab a school board's proposal to significantly rehab a school or build a new school. And when they do that, they need to conform to some regulations, some requirements. One of them is a minimum size acreage footprint for the campus for that school. It's pretty big. It's pretty unusual. Other states don't have the same requirement. We're kind of an outlier in that way. And so that, of course, in and of itself, you know, when a new school is proposed to be built in a smaller community, you know, rather than building on the existing site, taking advantage of the existing infrastructure, taking advantage of the land that's there, taking advantage of other things that might be in place like parks and, you know, other sorts of public realm amenities, you know, other private realm amenities, they're often forced out of town to the outskirts of town into a cornfield or something like that to build a big campus. Likewise, if the renovation rehab of that school is going to cost more than 60% of the cost of what would be otherwise new construction, they're forced to build new. And also, there's no bonus or no benefit assigned when evaluating those proposals if a school proposed to be built is going to be near transportation facilities, you know, ped bike access, transit access, existing roadway access, nor maximizing the opportunity, like I mentioned earlier, for nearby parks, recreation, you know, other public realm amenities, et cetera. So this changes those so what often happens, schools, you know, they get forced out of town. You have to build new roads. People have to drive. It drives up, makes transportation less efficient. It also drags, you know, new, you know, sprawl development out of town.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chairman, thanks. Senator Dibble, have you reviewed this provision with the Commissioner of Education?
Senator Bonoff. We'll be going on our way to education after we stop off with state and local government if we're successful here today. And so you bet we'll be doing that. I'm sure the Commissioner of Education will be very interested.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, so this, you're letting us see the whole bill, but in terms of its impact on education policy, we'll have a chance to review that
there. Yes.
And so we're just hearing it for information's sake at this point.
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Bonoff. Yes, yes, indeed.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Artman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Senator Dibble. I don't understand the language in Section 4. It looks like it's limitations on what the commissioner may and may not do and what the commissioner may and may not conclude. And I thought we just had a pretty good debate about that issue on the Senate floor about, you know, speech and whether we should be, you know, putting a gag on people and saying what they can think and what they can't think. I mean, I thought we were just talking about that. Is that, when I read that, that's what that looks like. So I'm hoping maybe you'll explain that to me so I understand it from your point of view.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman. It gives policy guidance to the commissioner, to the Department of Education. Right now, we already have a provision in place that says that they must examine school siting facilities with certain parameters and certain specifications. So Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, I don't think we're actually changing the premise that the Commissioner of Education give guidance and issue favorable or unfavorable findings. They do that now, and we're just saying some of the decisions upon which right now they're told, you know, you have to go out, you have to look at a minimum acreage, and if you don't have that minimum acreage, then you must issue an unfavorable finding. This says that that you can't give an unfavorable review just on that basis.
It's good for our health.
Senator Ortman, did you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I would just ask you to look at the language in Section 1 because I think it goes much further than what you just said. I think if you're going to say that it can't be the only basis upon which there's a negative comment, I think the word only should be in there somewhere. But you might want to look at that before you get to education.
Senator Dibble.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Senator Ortman, can you repeat that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that I think you want to look at that language again because it says it must not, the commissioner must not issue a negative or unfavorable review and comment under this section. But I think you're going to need that word only if you're trying to identify it as something that cannot be the sole basis of an unfavorable comment. So I hope you'll look at that. It doesn't really, it goes much further than what you just described as your intent.
Senator Dibble.
Great. Thank you. Good advice.
Senator Olson has a question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, having not reviewed the current guide for planning school construction in there, you might take a look at whether you could say this in a more positive way and achieve the same end, such as that either require or request that they amend their current guide for planning and construction to accommodate the facility planning and building that meet the specifications. In other words, that you don't have to move out of town, that you could build within a smaller community and other kinds of amenities that would be a part of it. So in other words, leave that option open because that door got closed when we made this big acreage requirements. So at least you'd be reopening the door to that option and do it in a positive way. Think about that. It might be a way to get away from it just being totally a negative directive to the commissioner.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
I'll see you in education.
All right. Let's look forward to our conversation. All right. So moving on, Mr. Chair. Section 6. What that does is it asks that I'm tracking. So we know that in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, most of the greenhouse gas emissions that come from the transportation sector, don't remember what percentage, but it's a very large percentage of them, come from private automobiles, passenger automobiles. And it asks that the Commissioner of Transportation take a look at vehicle miles traveled as one of the goals as they're looking to establish overarching transportation policy and transportation as they're doing their transportation planning for the state. MnDOT did get in touch with me. They would like to rephrase this language slightly so that we do talk about it in terms of goals. And so with that, while I'm thinking of it and I have it in front of me, I'd like to make an oral amendment. So, Mr. Chair, on line 5.23, rather than say will achieve, you can replace those words with have the goal of achieving. I'll make that motion.
Senator Dibble, you're saying to remove the word will.
Will achieve.
Or, and replace with have the goal of achieving.
I
replace will achieve with the words have the goal of achieving.
Have the goal of achieving.
I didn't follow.
Senator Dibble moves to remove the words will achieve and replace with have the goal of achieving.
On where?
Line 5.23.
Oh, I'm sorry, 5.23. It's remove will achieve and replace with have the goal of achieving. and then goes on by 2025. Does everyone understand the amendment? It's a verbal amendment. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, Senator Dibble moves to amend line 5.23 on Senate File 549 to remove will achieve and replace with have the goal of achieving. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
And just by way of explanation, Mr. Chair and members, this allows MnDOT to take a look at overall transportation as a larger function, as a larger set of systems, and try to achieve the highest and best transportation and mobility for the state. Moving on to section.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dahl.
Before we move on, Senator Dibble, the last line on that section there, reduction goal, the implemented policies shall not mandate the individuals who use their vehicle in their business reduce their vehicle miles traveled. Can you just give them a little more explanation
sure.
there and the thought behind that,
yes.
that provision?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. That was the language that was amended in at our first stop in the Environment Committee, and that came about as a result of a conversation with a particular trade group, the realtors, who were concerned that maybe we would start adopting policies that reach into, you know, individuals' daily life and do things, MnDOT or the legislature would adopt policies that are, you know, very specific to how people conduct their business or the transportation choices they make on a day-to-day basis. And that's not at all my interest. That's not the goal of the bill or anyone's interest. Certainly wouldn't fly, given our culture and our political traditions. Certainly occurs in other countries. We see other countries that restrict travel for individuals in their cars on every other day based on the number of their license plate or something like that. So it's not beyond the realm of imagination, but I think it's pretty far-fetched that we would contemplate anything like that here. But nevertheless, it was a fear. Realtors, of course, get in their car with their clients and drive from house to house to house all weekend long, and they were worried that somehow policies would be enacted that would confine or inhibit sort of activity.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, wouldn't that be better maybe just, as far as the not mandating individuals in general then, as far as whether they are using it for business or not, that we're not going to mandate individuals who use their vehicles to reduce their vehicle miles traveled?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, that would be fine. That's a good idea.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would move that we would do just that, and just to be individuals who use their vehicles, whether for business or I don't know how we would write that, but we just eliminate the business portion of it, so it's just individuals will not be mandated to reduce Please. Their vehicle miles traveled. Maybe Ms. Borowski can help us out with some language.
Council, maybe you can read that to Senator Dahl, see if that's what he's driving at.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, I would suggest on line 5.25 to delete everything after individuals, and then on 5.26 delete business.
Shall not mandate that individual juice. That's fine with me, Mr. Chair. If it's fine with Senator Dibble.
That. Senator Dibble agrees. Senator Dahl moves in an amendment on line 525, deleting who use their vehicle in there, and then on 526, delete business. So it reads, shall not mandate that individuals reduce their vehicle miles traveled. Does that meet with your approval, Senator Dahl? Any questions on the amendment? Senator Mouat.
Mr. Chair, that broadens the categories of people to everybody, right? And that is the intent, Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Yes. The goal of this bill is to create choices, create alternatives and options, and you know, people will use the transportation that best suits their needs. We believe that through land use innovations and transportation innovations, people will choose what's best for themselves at any given moment in time, and overall vehicle miles traveled will come down.
Yeah. Senator Dibble, I was actually going to ask a similar question, whether this meant vehicles who commute in their vehicles, and now that's been answered. Senator Dibble renews his motion on line 525 to delete everything after individuals and add and on 526 delete business. Senator Ortman.
My comment is, I'll make my comment, Mr. Chairman, after the motion, if you don't mind.
Okay. Any other questions? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Dibble.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Senator Ortman.
If I could comment, and perhaps it's to Senator Dahl and not to, or and to those who voted yes on the last motion, I think this is incrementalism. I think this is where you're heading. I think that you can fix the language here to say that it's not a mandate on individuals for business or recreational use, and I think that that might make you feel better now, but I think we should all address the fact that that's where this policy is heading. And I think there are a lot of Minnesotans that would be very troubled by a policy like this. I understand that Senator Dibble is trying to accomplish something and move us forward with this dialogue, but let's be really clear about what this is. If we tell MnDOT that they shall put together an implementation and facilitation of this study and goals and plans, that's exactly what they'll do. And they'll make recommendations probably to reduce the vehicle miles traveled by individuals. It certainly still says in this same language that it would be an implementation by other public and private entities. So let's just be really clear when you vote for this that you're voting for the incremental plan to put in place a regulation of vehicle miles traveled by public and private entities.
Mr. Senator Dibble.
I respectfully, completely, and totally 180 degrees disagree with Senator Ortman. As a matter of fact, I think what we have right now are policies that force people to travel more by car. You know, so if we want to talk about creating policies and circumstances and infrastructure that make things happen, that's what we have now, quite simply. You know, we have policies and we have, you know, the primary objective in a lot of transportation and engineering agencies to build ever more and ever wider distributed roads farther and farther. And it denies people choices, denies businesses the opportunity to locate or co-locate with other sorts of land uses, forces cities to develop in specific ways. So, you know, we have right now policies in place that force people into certain economic circumstances, owning and operating a car, and force people to travel in certain ways. This is about creating more choices. And so that may be Senator Ortman's view, and I respect it completely. My view is 180 degrees the other direction.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, it's not the first time, it won't be the last. We have respectful disagreements often, and this is one that I'm sure will carry forward. I completely disagree with the idea that we have policies that force people to drive cars. I think just service on the transit subcommittee of this committee would indicate the exact opposite. We are subsidizing mass transit. We're creating all kinds of options for traveling in different ways. I think that's the policy direction already. It's not the opposite of that. That's where we're heading already. I don't think we need to do more to prohibit people from using their cars. And I think, you know, that's where you're heading with this bill. I respectfully disagree. But please don't suggest that the policies in the state of Minnesota are encouraging or are forcing people to drive cars. I totally disagree, and I think the history of and the statutes in place now completely oppose that.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in response to the subsidy argument, you know, this is something that comes up all the time, and I can only say that, you know, if you check with your local officials either at the county level or city level or township, you're going to find that A disproportionately high percentage of our property taxes are going to fix up our roads. I represent an area where a couple of the townships have spent over 50% of their property tax money on roads. And so roads are subsidized as well. And there's some reports out there that show that roads are more heavily subsidized than transit systems. And then there's others that show that inverse is also true. So I think that, the argument of using that, we shouldn't do or we shouldn't provide as many transit options as we do because, possibly the ridership is quite a bit less or the subsidy is so high, only half of it works because the subsidy is high on every form of transportation. It doesn't matter if you're flying a plane or riding a boat or on the rail or on the road. We subsidize all of those activities. And in the regard to, light rail and other forms of transit, light rail provided 40% of all the fare boxes of all the fare box revenues to the Met Council last year. Think about that. All the fare boxes that are out there on all these buses and everything, light rail provided 40% of the take for the Met Council and fare boxes. And that's on the honor system. I think that if we continue to offer these options that Senator Dibble is looking at, including PRT, sooner or later we're going to get to the point where I think everybody in Minnesota would be not only benefited, but everybody will be on board, so to speak. Pardon the pun again. But, we can't forget that every form of transportation is subsidized. And as long as we're moving in the right direction, I think this is, we're going to have more people on mass transit, which is going to reduce the greenhouse gases. That's pretty apparent. The other reason why I like to see more initiatives coming forward with transit is it does free up space on the roads. And I think that the 394 project was a good example of that, and hopefully we have a replication with the UPA project. And that means, Senator Day, there's more room on the highway.
Senator Ulz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to take just a small exception to Senator Murphy's statement about the subsidization of by property taxes for the maintenance of roads. You can't build a home or building in any unit of government that doesn't have access to a road because you're either going to use it or be served by it. In other words, we have to have a road to get to any of our locations because the police or the fire department or whatever needs to get there, and we need to be able to leave. So in that case, all who are benefited when it's your local unit of government are served by it. So it's whether you can call it a subsidy, I think it's essentially a user. People who are using it or are being served by it are paying for it. And that's just one form of the way we choose to pay for it. It may not all be, but a lot of it is through our gas tax and registration and that to go to building these roads. But I still don't see that as technically a subsidy because I don't know that there's in the use of those roads. I don't know that there are people who aren't using and benefiting that are being forced to pay for it.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think a lot of this discussion is valid, but it really kind of gets down to a whole different issue than we're talking about. I don't think everybody gets up in the morning and says, I would like to drive farther to go to work. It does get down to land use. It gets down to planning. And I was going to stay out of the conversation kind of because I think there's some things that I like in the bill and I like what it accomplishes, and then other people know that just using the term global warming or greenhouse gas reduction and stuff drives me crazy. But what we need to think about is the way our cities have zoned out the ability for people to build houses in that city, wanting all the tax dollars from businesses and yet wanting the workers for that business is to come from someplace else that causes these vehicle miles to be traveled. So it's a broader discussion that I think we do need as a state, we do need as a society to think if a business wants to locate in a certain area and they're only going to pay X amount of dollars for wages, you got to think about where are your people going to come to get there. And if it's a lower paying job, then by not having any lower cost housing in that area, we've forced all those vehicle miles to be traveled. We've forced the issue for transit. We've forced more roads to be built. With our poor decision making about how do we try to, make this all work, and it would benefit the business owner as well to have those people traveling less distance. There's less excuses for not showing up to work. So it's a broader discussion, and all valid points here, but I think we need to look at the big vision of how we think through some of those issues. I just wanted to bring that up for people's thought.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, I'll try to run through the bill. We do have some folks who want to testify and some we want to take action on this bill. It's got a number of other stops and deadlines loom, if it's the committee's pleasure. Now I forgot where I was. Let's see.
You're starting on page six.
Yes.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Starting with section 10, starting with section 8. Section 8 includes greenhouse gas reductions as an item to be considered to drive Senator Jungbauer crazy. but also it is to is one of those items to be considered alongside all the others as the Metropolitan Council is giving guidance to local communities for their comprehensive planning. Section 9 also establishes, similar to MnDOT's goal, recognizes Met Council's unique role in guiding land use plans and the corresponding regional investments in transportation and sewer services, so it provides for a vehicle miles traveled reduction policies at the Metropolitan Council. Section 10, we have the Livable Communities Grant Program. That's a matching grant program provided on a competitive basis to communities around the metropolitan area who are undertaking certain kinds of development, and those criteria are spelled out in the guidelines, and it adds reducing greenhouse gas emissions to that list of Livable Communities Fund criteria. Section 11 has to do with when, in fact, communities in the metropolitan area undertake comprehensive planning, that they establish vehicle miles traveled reduction as a goal for those local comprehensive plans. It asks them to be updated in the near future rather than waiting 10 years. We're in a bit of a mismatch moment right now. The local comprehensive plans are coming into the Metropolitan Council to be approved this year. We're kind of at that 10-year timeline right now. And so we're looking for, because we know from the work of the MCAG and a report that we're soon going to hear about, the ability to make these changes and to reach our targets as adopted as a larger policy for the state are possible and actually need to start occurring sooner rather than later. We can't afford to wait 10 years, so it asks for those comp plans to conform to these criteria and be updated sooner than 10 years from now. Now, that, of course, creates some unease on the part of local communities in the metropolitan area as well as the Metropolitan Council. And so we're working with those groups to figure out what sort of timing does make sense to the extent that they're going to undergo some administrative expense in updating their comprehensive plans on an interim basis. If we can figure out how to find some resources to assist them, maybe out of the Livable Communities levy that we do on a region-wide basis, as well as working with the University of Minnesota, which is the next section, and it's commissioning the University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Studies to undertake a planning model and working with local units of government to do a lot of the technical and a lot of the, take on a lot of the capacity to make these changes to comprehensive planning. We've had some very, very productive conversations with the University of Minnesota. I don't think this language is going to stay exactly as it is because they have some really great ideas about how to engage local communities for the next few years in developing that original research, you know, making it specific to the experience of the Twin Cities, working with those local governments on a voluntary basis, figure out what makes the most sense, working interactively with the Met Council, and then proceeding from there. And then finally, this last little subdivision provides grants for those communities in greater Minnesota that want to, on a voluntary basis, change their zoning codes, do some of this work. With that, Mr. Chair, we can move to testimony, or I can respond to questions.
Senator Scoy has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, on Section 11, the comprehensive plans, I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, but it says each local government unit must establish. How broad-based are you thinking there? Is that township level?
Senator Scoy, this is specific to the metropolitan area, for starters.
Metropolitan area, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that, it does
that
include...
That answers my question.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, this may be, I don't mean to nitpick on this, but in vehicle miles traveled, it's non-freight motor vehicle miles traveled. What about the four-wheel utility vehicle with a gasoline engine that one is driving around one's place or that people are using, other four-wheelers or snowmobiles? They're traveling... That's a vehicle, and they're traveling miles in various kinds of settings. Are you intending that they be encompassed in this, or do you need to clarify that they are not?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, no, I'm not intending that they be included. You know, folks who are driving around in their private capacity but not individuals, but, you know, creating systems, creating choices, et cetera. Creating alternatives, you know, certainly not ATVs, not snowmobiles, and not you know, trucks that are driving around to make commercial
so
deliveries.
You're on record for that. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Senator Boniff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, with regard to the appropriation, is that the fiscal note on the bill, or how is that? Can you explain the finances on that?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep. We don't quite yet have a fiscal note on the bill. You know, we do have an amount identified, but, you know, that's a work in progress because we're working with the University of Minnesota on how much exactly that's going to take and how we want, you know, what exactly we want to do and how we want to do it. You know, fiscal note will be no doubt forthcoming. MnDOT has determined that, you know, costs are minimal or negligible. Certainly there will be costs to the Met Council and costs to local units, and we need to deal with that.
Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that same section, then, the last line, you were talking about encouraging the Center of Transportation Studies to identify things. Is that, since we're giving them, appropriating money, shouldn't we just tell them that that's what we want them to do? So just encouraging them to do so? Or is that language strong enough for you on that section?
Talking about line 8.34?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
I would just
it's
move
a good
to,
it's a good question. This language is going to change dramatically.
Okay.
Because
I guess I would just move to strike that word and put shall in there. Instead of is encouraged to, would just say shall identify.
Senator Dibble, are you?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's fine. Though I'm sure that much of this section will be replaced at some point. I don't know if we get into. Couple issues I'll raise. I mean, I'm fine with this language, but just a couple of issues I'll raise. One is, you know, we want to work collaboratively with the University of Minnesota in designing this effort, number one. Number two, you know, they probably know better than we do exactly how to design the research and how to design the outreach and how to design the effort to implement and actualize some of this work. And finally, I don't know if we get into a constitutional issue when we're directing the university to do stuff. We're they have kind of their own separate constitutional. I mean, I know we can direct exactly how our money is spent for projects like this that we're commissioning, but I don't know if council can help us with that.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Saltzman?
So on that point, that's a concern of mine, mm-hmm. and that I think we need to start putting strings on the university because we do appropriate money, and then we need to be sure, especially when we have an appropriation for what we believe is something very specific, that it should be a contract. And I've heard from other states as we've talked about this issue, not just in transportation but other issues, that other states are looking at contracts to say you take the money, you agree to use it this way, or you don't get it. So I think that's very appropriate. I trust the university, but at the same time, I think it's important that we look at that, and not just in this particular issue, but a very important point, because there is this constitutional issue. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add that would be something maybe to look at as this moves forward.
Senator Dibble.
It's a good idea. Never thought about the contract approach.
And I have Senator Kielash and then Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, on the revision of the comprehensive plan, you just, you know, we know that these plans are coming in now. I'm wondering if it needs to be as comprehensive, at least the way I read it. It seems really all-encompassing. Or can it just be an amendment to their current plans to lessen the cost to local units of government?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that's ultimately what will result in happening is, you know, even when comp plans are completely redone, they tend to be an update of the existing comprehensive plan that they have on the books, even when they do it every 10 years. So I think that will be effectively what happens is the existing plans will be, you know, will be revised to conform to, you know, some of these new specifications. You know, and even the language in the bill itself says by July 2013 must revise its comprehensive plans as needed to accomplish the vehicle miles traveled reduction goal. So I think the spirit of the language is consistent with what you hope would happen.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saltzman, I think, dealt pretty well with the issue that I was talking about, but technically we can't tell them what to do, but we certainly can direct them with regarding the funds that we give them. So that's I think she made a very good suggestion in getting a contractual arrangement if you know what it is you want from that money.
Yeah, Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, in regards to Senator Dahl's motion, I think we should put should in there instead of shall. And we've never had any problem getting information out of the center, and Mr. Johns has always been more than helpful to guide us through a lot of sticky wickets. So I would move that we strike the three words after transportation studies and just insert should.
We actually have Senator Dahl's motion.
Oh,
Senator Dahl, would you?
I'll withdraw my motion then in favor of his motion.
Then I would make that motion.
Senator Dibble, are you square with should?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a good change. I support that change.
So what we have is Senator Murphy moves on line 8.34 that we replace the words is encouraged to with should, so that the Center of Transportation Studies should identify and use. Any other questions on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Senator Dibble. It is 2:30.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chair, we have, speaking of the University of Minnesota and doing research and reports that we commission, we have Julian Marshall, who worked on this report, which took a look at the transportation sector in Minnesota and its contribution to global warming, greenhouse gas emissions, and carbon dioxide emissions. And this was a research commissioned by us, like I said, and they did an outstanding job. And and you may be familiar with this. I think it was presented in this committee sometime previously, and it supports the work of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. It tells us a little bit about what's going on in the transportation sector and what sort of technology and policy changes might help us get to the greenhouse gas and global warming issues that we're trying to address as a state in the transportation arena.
Okay, great. Thank you for inviting me here. My name is Julian Marshall. I'm an assistant professor of environmental engineering at University of Minnesota. I also hold an appointment in urban and regional planning. I'm here on behalf of myself and also my co-authors on this report, all of which you have a copy of this report, as well as Lori McGinnis from Center for Transportation Studies. And I've been asked here to summarize briefly the findings of a study that we did at University of Minnesota. Before I get into that, I just have briefly, I want to mention a point of history and then a couple of current events that I think are relevant to this. So in going through my files, here's a point of history that I think is quite relevant. On the left is from the U.S. Government Printing Office and a call to action that time showing leadership in an area. And, you know, I think this is quite relevant today. It's no secret that money spent on gasoline goes to places that are not very happy with us, and we're not happy about that fact. And that's quite relevant today. I would also, I guess, mention,
Mr. Chairman, it's ridiculous. Carry on.
Okay, I guess I'd also mention that the issues we're talking about are all interconnected. Climate change, transportation, energy, geopolitics, climate security, energy security, these are all interrelated issues. So I did start with something which is aims to be a little bit provocative to get the discussion going.
Mr. Chair, are we still in America? I mean, I'm wondering where
Senator
I'm
Rutgers.
At. I find that to be very offensive. An insult to every person who drives a car. I guess an insult to me because I drove to the Capitol alone today. I find that very insulting.
I apologize greatly. My intent is not to be insulting.
Mr. Marshall.
Maybe if it's okay, I may move on to the other issues that are up here and be happy to discuss this further after this. And I can get to the substance of what I came here to talk about, which is a research investigation that we did. Would that be acceptable?
It's not up to me. It's up to the chair here whether you're proceeding or not. I find that very offensive.
Mr. Marshall, no more cartoons. Thank you.
I apologize. I will move on then to our study, the investigation that we did. I was going to lead with our conclusions. We had two. The first is that to meet our state's greenhouse gas goals, we require the three approaches that we looked at. One is changes to vehicles. The other is changes to fuels. And the last is changes to land use or vehicle miles traveled. And the second conclusion we came to is that meeting our goals requires starting today, to get to where we aim to be. And I'll mention what those goals are in a moment. Again, this is a study from University of Minnesota through the Center for Transportation Studies. There are several people involved in the study listed up here in civil engineering, in mechanical engineering, and in the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. We also had a long list of people who helped us with the study, and we're appreciative to them, both in the state government and also outside experts that were able to comment on our research. Here are the goals as passed in the Next Generation Energy Act. They are to reduce greenhouse gas emissions relative to 2005 emissions by the percents that are listed up there, 15% by 2015, and so on. That piece of legislation did not specify how those reductions would come from different sectors of the economy. So for the purpose of this study, we assume that transportation would aim to meet those goals. That is, also within the transportation sector, they would aim to reduce emissions by 15% by 2015 and so on. For today, I'm going to focus on on-road gasoline vehicles, which are the largest portion of the transportation emissions, and also specifically talk to the land use issue, since that's relevant to the bill that's being discussed today. This is the guts of our mathematical model, our analytical framework. We track the emissions over time as the product of three terms. The first term is fuel consumption in gallons per mile. So this is the reciprocal of miles per gallon, which we're all familiar with in comparing fuel consumption among cars. This is just 1 over miles per gallon. The second term is the carbon content of the fuel. So that would be an amount of carbon per gallon of fuel. And then the third piece is the activity level, vehicle miles traveled. And that's how we can calculate the emissions over time, is by looking at how each of those three terms may shift over time. And again, for today, I'm going to focus on the last of those three terms, since that's what's most relevant to this bill. So to give you just one example of how this plays out, here is an example of inputs to the model. This shows historic vehicle miles traveled and then projections that we received from officials within the state government as to how vehicle miles traveled might move into the future. You can see that there's been a rise over time, looking at the historic long term. And then in the short term, the past few years, state data actually suggests that it's leveled off. So we used as inputs to our model what would happen if vehicle miles traveled were to stay flat, that's the lowest line up there, increase at a low level, that's the blue middle line, or increase at a higher rate, and that's the red upper line. Using those three as inputs, this is what we see as outputs to the model. Here we're assuming that we're making shifts in vehicles and also assuming that we're making shifts in fuels, and just looking at what are the implications of different vehicle miles traveled with those same three lines. Also shown up here are the targets from the Next Generation Energy Act, the 2015 target and the 2025 target. I guess the main point of this picture is that there's a fair difference among those lines. That is to say, what happens to vehicle miles traveled has a significant influence on what our greenhouse gas emissions will be going into the future. And also, specifically, it's only the lowest of those three lines that actually meets the goals. So our conclusion based on charts like this is that what happens to vehicle miles traveled is important, very important, as to whether or not our state will meet the objectives that we've set out. So I'll wrap up there, and again, I'll just restate our main conclusions. To meet the goals in the Next Generation Energy Act requires shifts in all three parameters, the vehicles, in fuels, and in land use / vehicle miles traveled, and that to meet those objectives requires starting now. I'll also mention, although what I've talked about so far is focused on greenhouse gas emissions, of course, there are several other impacts to our transportation infrastructure, air pollution, public health, water pollution, and so on. And I think one of the goals, of course, is to meet those greenhouse gas goals while also meeting several other objectives. So with that, thank you kindly. I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Mr. Marshall?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langston.
Quite a number of years ago, I was down in Florida, and I rented a car, and that car had this device that monitored exactly how much miles per gallon you were getting at any given second. And it was really kind of interesting to kind of play around with that. And boy, you could really see how a person's driving habits had a lot to do with how many miles per gallon you'd get. So, you know, we can talk about the vehicles getting much better and so on. But I guess you can even put these devices on a car you got now. And I would think in the future maybe we should be looking at that, because it made just a tremendous amount of difference. I could get over 30 miles to a gallon with a fairly good-sized car, but then if I kind of stepped on it trying to pick up some speed, boy, it just dropped way down versus if I did it gradually. And it kind of seemed like that is one thing we could do that wouldn't be very costly at all. And after a while, I think a person would just get in the habit of driving in ways that may get them an extra 2, 3, 4 miles to a gallon.
Senator Langseth, I think you're the MVEST problem. My 15-year-old van has that on it, coming from the factory.
it probably was 15 years ago that it happened. And so we probably should all be doing it now. We should all have it now. But that's one thing that I thought, you know, we could do without much cost.
much change in people's habits.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Langseth. I've got one of those on my truck, and I noticed that when I'm stuck in traffic, my miles per gallon goes way down versus when I'm free-flowing down the road. So it makes a big difference on the traffic levels.
Senator Dibb.
I have one on my car, too. Make sure I keep my tires at full inflation. Yes. But a serious response to Senator Langseth, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's going to be many things that we're going to need to do. There's no one magic bullet, no one policy that's going to get us to where we need to. This is one in a whole array of ideas, some of them articulated by the Climate Change Advisory Group.
Any other questions? Senator Kielish.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, does this study include the massive investments we're going to be making in high-speed or light rail or the other multimodal transportation that we're talking about invested earlier in this committee meeting?
Senator,
or is this just with the, based on the current transportation system that we've got?
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Marshall could probably answer the question better, but it certainly envisions that you know, the transportation sector can achieve the reductions that we've set forth for ourselves as goals in our greenhouse gas emission, our carbon emission reductions, by the target dates that we've set for ourselves with existing technologies, with existing policy tools that are available to us, and that we need to do it sooner rather than later. Part of that equation is absolutely the use of transit, but also how transit intersects and interacts with land use decisions. So I guess the short answer is yes. You have a
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marshall, I'm just trying to get an idea, is if we invest in all of these alternative transit systems and reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled, if that was incorporated in this study, or or is this study based on current options that we have available? As we invest more, obviously, in light rail or better bus service or bus rapid transit or whatever, isn't that going to change some of this? And I don't know where – what I'm trying to figure out is where the study is coming from, if it's a current system or is it predicting the future?
Well, Mr. Chair, the study envisions a number of models. I mean, so there's no one answer. It wasn't simply measuring the existing existing state of the world and you know, policy that was already enacted. As it sets forth some alternatives, some options, ran different models. If you look at pages 6 and 7, you see the interaction of a variety of different policy ideas and the like. So you know, it gives us some idea of different vehicle technologies, et cetera. You know, some land use, you know, you mix that in with land use, et cetera. So it certainly wasn't a measure of the existing policy. It was giving us, you know, a little roadmap of places we might go to achieve certain outcomes.
I would reiterate something similar, that we looked at a number of different scenarios. There's not just in our modeling, it's not that there's one forecast of what will happen, but instead saying, well, there's several options, and how would that play out in the future? Example being what you just gave, if there's more or less investment in mass transit.
So the conclusions that you're coming – sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kielish.
The conclusions that you're coming here with are based on the kinds of investments we're currently considering in expanding the ability for folks to use mass transit and multimodal. So part of what I'm trying to get at is, if this study is based on current investment, then the conclusions could be off based on if we invest more in transit. So I'm not sure. I'm thinking that we're going to have an easier time hitting the 25 of 25 in if we invest in the transit systems and the in that. And I'm not. I'm just trying to see how much is reflected of that is reflected in your study.
Mr. Marshall.
Yeah, that's a great question. The short answer is that we ran a number of scenarios that would include a range from do nothing on that front to do more than we're likely to do, to see how much of an impact does it make. So with the caveat that we don't have the specifics of this mass transit project X, which would go from this city to this city, how much difference would that make? But instead, we study the issue in general. How much can mass transit in general provide in terms of greenhouse gas emission reductions? So we did look at that issue in general and included our modeling.
Senator Dibble, we are drawing close to time where we need to get out of here because there's another meeting coming in. Well, do you have additional testifiers?
No, Mr. Chair. We're not going to call on the rest of them. I'll move the bill, Mr. Chair. I know their hands waving.
Senator Day.
A real quick question. Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm wondering is if we have 3 million cars in a 7-county or a 9-county area today, say nothing about if cars become electric or they go from 14 miles a gallon to 28 miles a gallon, so the 3 million cars in the next 5 years double their mileage. But let's do today. How many cars would we have to get rid of to meet the emission standards that you might feel comfortable with?
Senator Dibble.
I don't know the specific answer to that question, but we clearly know that we need to get a handle on this. You know, if we believe that global warming is a fact, you know, is real. Some in this room do, and some don't. And we know that 24% of the emissions, carbon dioxide emissions, come from mostly, folks driving around in their cars, and most of those folks don't feel like they have transit alternatives, transit choices, and transit is not a viable option for them because, there's so much distance in between where their house and where their school and where their job and, where they shop is. Then we clearly need to create some choices and some different patterns of development for folks. So, granted, lots more people are coming to the metropolitan area. They say 1 million people in the next 10 years.
Okay,
so where are we going to put them all, and where are they all going to drive, and are they all going to be driving around?
Yeah. Senator Dave, follow up.
And Senator Dibble, and you're committed and you're moving ahead. Some of the questions I have, like we put in light rail. Do we have more cars? Do we have less emission than we had 3 or 4 years ago? When we put in the North Star commuter rail, will we have less cars and less emission than we had? And the only reason I say that is because I'm a believer, and I've watched this for 20 years. We have given people garages to park in downtown. We have saved them hundreds of dollars. We have done everything we could to get people to eat, just put two in a car, and nobody would do it. In fact, we now changed it, which was great. We now have a little system that's working. We're taking in. So, I'm all for just, do some of your rail lines, and we'll find out if people will get out of their cars and jump on the trains. I personally don't think they will, but that's fine. So the point is will they have cars to drive to the rail line to get on, and what will the emissions be then? Or should we be looking at electric cars, higher gas mileage cars, routes that people don't have to stop and idle their car 40 at a red light on a ramp meter when the highway is free? There's a lot of things that we might be able to do that would give us the same bang for the buck as this bill is pretty troublesome for a guy that likes his car like I do. So I know how I'm going to vote. But anyway, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're running out of time.
Well, Mr. Chair, I probably agree with more of what Senator Day said. Then he'd be surprised how much I agree with him on some of this. So.
Senator Ma, real quickly.
Mr. Chair, I know that we have to get out of here because I know who the next committee chair is coming in here. But
and she's pretty tough.
just for the record, Mr. Chair, I in theory, I'm very supportive of Senator Dibble's proposal, and I would like to see it move forward. But I must say that I do And so I'm going to support it today, but I must say that I do have some reservations about what the end result cost is going to be to the local governments to put this plan together.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you acknowledge that. I'm just going to put that on the record that I will support this as we move forward, but at some point I hope that as it makes stops in the next committee, the state and local government committee, that you will come up with a better funding funding numbers, and that information will be made available to all of us, because I am concerned. I think our cities and local government want to support this kind of effort, but at this time our local governments are having a pretty tough time, and I'd like to see what those numbers look like.
Senator, Ms. Chair, thank you, Senator Waugh. I completely agree. And I've had, the start of very productive conversations with our local units. To be sure, they have an administrative task on their hands. We need to help them with that. They also stand to save tremendous dollars in future infrastructure costs, too. So there's a bigger picture to look at as well. With that, Ms. Chair, I'll move Senate File 549 as amended, be recommended to pass, and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government.
We have one question, Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, and I think that if the 90% of Minnesotans who drive their cars to and from work and take their kids to school and don't have access to mass transit saw what we were doing, they would be very upset with this bill. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call vote.
Senator Dibble moves Senate File 549, and Senator Ortman calls for a roll call vote.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Boniff.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support this bill moving on in the spirit in which it's presented. And as I understand it, the spirit in which it's presented is for us to begin to have this conversation, and then it's going to go to other committees where it has jurisdiction. And so while I appreciate Senator Ortman's comments, I understand that this bill, we still don't have a fiscal note to it, and so that's all. Just I want to comment that my support for the bill is in concept. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
If I could, this is the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. Is that correct? And so we're voting on the policy and the finance in this bill when we vote for this bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ortman, we are in the policy committee right now.
So, yeah. Mr. Chair, will we hear this bill again when we get the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Senator Ortman, we're going to hear this bill again when we get the fiscal note.
Thank you. There's been a roll call called, and Senator Dibble renews his motion to pass Senate File 549, and I believe it goes on to the state and local government. Is that correct? Be forwarded to the state
Mr. Chair,
government?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, the
Senator Murphy.
Roll will be called.
Aye.
Senator Bonoff?
Aye.
Senator Carlson?
Aye.
Senator Day?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Dahl?
Yes.
Senator Fischbach?
No.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator Jungbauer?
No.
Senator Kielash?
Yes.
Senator Koch?
No.
Senator Langseth?
Aye.
Senator Moi?
Aye.
Olsen is absent. Senator Olson? Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Ress? Absent. Senator Saltzman?
Aye.
Senator Steven?
Yes.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
Aye, 6 nays.
There being 11 ayes, 6 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
The meeting is adjourned.